Buggy Bacall with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. Lately, I've had a little burst of media mentions. A sound bite I've noticed reporters respond to is when I call myself a chicken evangelist. I've been using that term for a while because there's lots of people out there claiming to be chicken experts or chicken consultants, and at least one other chicken radio personality. I'm not competitive by nature, so chicken evangelist seems both unique and encompassing of my many chickeny activities. I realize some folks think evangelist has bad connotations. They think of the 1980s and televangelists, scandals of finance, sex, and hypocrisy. But evangelism is a word that has long been in lexicon and hasn't always referred to any particular religion, or even religion necessarily. A literal translation is bringer of good news. It essentially means just relaying information about a particular set of beliefs to others who do not hold those beliefs. I felt similarly compelled to reclaim the word propaganda when I was doing grassroots politics a few years ago, and have been tempted to call myself a chicken propagandist, except I want to keep the Bucky Bacall agenda nonpartisan and more about personal action than public policy, except where public policy obstructs personal action. But the thing about calling myself an evangelist is it raises the bar that I have to bring my message to people who are not already signed on to the Bacall agenda. I'm good with that. I've heard some feedback, very gratifying, from listeners who were thinking about getting started as chickeners, discovered the broadcast, and enjoyed it, and after a few shows, decided to make the leap. I love that. I have also heard from friends and relatives who never admitted quite how on the fence they were, but after secretly listening to my shows and then seeing me in a respected media source, finally got chickens and then reported that I inspired them. The downside to being an evangelist is that people have a weird fear of being converted. I try to keep my evangelism low pressure, but still a lot of people tell me after the fact about doubts or questions that were holding them back. Like they were afraid that my powers of persuasion would get them into something that's morally desirable, but that would radically and irrevocably complicate their life. Recently, an acquaintance from the local sustainability, slow food, ethicurian, urban farming crowd, someone who you might think would be a case of me preaching to the converted, tentatively said to me, "I fully support people having chickens, and I think it's awesome, but I can't have them in my yard because I have a lot on my plate right now, and I really can't take on another project." I sensed her trepidation, so I got myself into the most chillax zone I could and said, "Well, you know, I really think if you have that outdoor space and you're already committed to growing stuff in it, chickens would actually make your life easier, with very little setup hassle, and would actually help you feel less stressed out, and would save you a few dollars while you look for full-time employment. Would you like me to help you?" She pretty much ran away. But maybe she'll be back. I do think people can't hear the message just from me. They have to hear it from me in three different ways, then see it in two different media that I didn't hand to them, and then meet three neighbors, co-workers, or relatives who were chickening and love it. So I just do my bit and try not to take the rejection personally. Honestly, I believe that everyone with outdoor space, and even some people with an interest in indoor chickening, should figure out how to incorporate chickens into their routine, because chickens will help improve their health, their finances, and their outlook. And they will also be doing their civic duty in decentralizing agriculture. But the most important part of my message is that chickening isn't something to add to your list of chores of personal responsibilities that lower your carbon footprint or animal suffering, although that may indeed be the case. My focus, my message, the good news I'm bringing you is chickening is fun, a good time, and it'll set you free. Do I hear a hallelujah? Am I a zealot? Does this sound like dogma? Gosh, I hope not. But speaking of dogma, and not preaching to the choir, there's a question I've been running into for years from folks who were not initiated into the decentralizing agriculture ranks. How can you be so dogmatically against factory farming when there's no other way to feed our overpopulated earth? And I have to admit, it's hard not to sound dogmatic when growing and distributing food is such a complex set of systems, and I sometimes only have a few seconds to explain what I'm for and against. I say factory farming in those situations as a shorthand for a variety of techniques used to produce food that reflect innovations of the industrial age, including monoculture, growing thousands of acres of a single variety of one food, or confined animal feedlot operations, thousands of animals cramped into many acres of space barely bigger than the animals, chemical fertilizer, pesticides, antibiotics, and growth hormones, the mechanization of finishing food for market in assembly lines that imprecisely, sloppily, and within a factory's acceptable error of margin, sometimes completely botchingly, the job of washing and trimming plants, but also of slaughtering and butchering animals. Energy-intensive storage of food in artificial environments and distribution centers. Transportation of food across thousands of miles to big-box groceries, who in turn store, handle, and manage with inconsistent care, yet also frequently throw out massive quantities of food that is edible but doesn't display well. As I've said before, what suffers is aesthetics, but also nutrition content, the environment, which becomes toxified, animals that are treated inhumanely, the economics of farming and real estate, public health, national food security, and in my view, mental health and the very ideals of democracy. That's a summary, and I skipped a few points for the sake of brevity. Yet while any one of those things might be defensible, if it was shown to truly increase yields for a hungry planet, taken together, I don't think it's a matter of faith that the industrialization of agriculture to produce cheap food is probably not worth the real price we pay. Alternately, industrial agriculture has a vested interest in insisting that GMOs, pesticides, monoculture, overcrowding of animals, etc., are the only way to increase yields, despite the fact that neo-traditional techniques have been shown to be more successful when appropriate to the setting. I'd argue that the aggressively reiterated spin that people will starve to death unless farming practices that keep a handful of large corporations in business continue fits the definition of dogma as prescribed doctrine just as well as the slow food articles of faith, especially since the jury is far from out on the efficiency of industrialized agricultures. Indeed, there is a growing body of reproducible results showing that techniques, I like to call neo-traditional, can actually outproduce industrial agriculture and produce more yield per acre, and do it long-term without the imminent system collapse many argue Big Ag is headed for. And not only do so many of the neo-traditional versus industrial comparisons translate to animals, in many neo-traditional systems, animals are included in the mix as part of the system, like the example in the book Omnivore's Dilemma of Joel Salatin and his Polyface Farms, where it all starts with grass and winds up with a variety of meats and vegetables all trading outputs and inputs and producing enough to bring product to market. I'll post some links to my Facebook fan page and the website. But one of the most well-known organic versus factory farming comparisons came out a few years ago, the Pennsylvania-based Rodale Institute's 27-year comparison of two organic and one conventional fields of crops. The study, now not the only of its kind, showed that the non-synthetic techniques did at least as well. Since that study began, the alternative food production movement has developed and has gotten better at low-input, low-impact agriculture. Small farmers seeking to find alternatives to factory farm abuses have developed many techniques under names like biointensive, permaculture, small organics, situationally adjusted techniques that use what's at hand to build healthy agriculture systems, and tend to avoid petroleum-based fertilizers and power sources, just at the same time as dwindling supplies and rising prices of oil, gas, and synthetics cut into industrial techniques' efficiency. I say, people interested in sustainable agriculture, or whatever you call it, or even just regular schmoes who think gardening seems like a neat idea, don't have to wait for corporations or farmers of any size to work this stuff out. All of us can participate. You can call it an experiment, or you can call it a transition. Either way, let's all see what we can raise or grow in our own backyards and see what happens rather than worry about whether or not we need to preserve factory farming in order to feed all these people. It's not like we Bukovian hardliners have the power to snap our fingers and all the factory farms will disappear and then maybe we'll be sorry when there's suddenly no food. On the other hand, if everyone vowed right now to buy factory farmed as a last resort after first seeking out homegrown, locally grown, or small-scale organic first, we'd find out in a matter of years as the economy shifts if we need factory farms by trying to live without them. My agenda is that if a few people succumb to my evangelism and start powering down now, maybe the neighbors will see how much fun it is and catch on, and all the interlocking systems of reproduction and production and consumption will power down together, and we can all continue to have a good time without worrying about the collapse. Some of my friends and listeners think it's already too late, and a huge system collapse is imminent, and learning to grow food simply increases your personal chance of survival. I'm still rooting for all of us, but either way, I'm doing my best to plan for good times. This is Bucky Bacall. I'll see you next week.